Welcome to Gold Star Classroom, the podcast where our panelists go back to school. We'll grade them on their answers to a variety of general knowledge and trivia questions. They don't know what we're going to ask, and we don't know what they're going to say. The student with the highest grade at the end of the class will win the coveted classroom prize, the Golden Banana. I'm your host and headmaster, Professor Jerry Jaffe. Welcome to today's episode of Gold Star Classroom. I'm your host and teacher, Professor Jerry Jaffe, and now I'd like to introduce you to today's class. On my far left is an alum of the Second City Comedy Writing class and Cleveland-based comedian Chris McVetta.
Hello, Jerry. Thanks for having me today.
Hello, Chris. Thanks for letting me have you today. On my immediate left is a Cleveland-based actor, comedian, and equine specialist, Cammie Harkness.
Less.
Cammie Harkless. Cammie Harkmore.
It could be either. Well, good afternoon, Jerry. You look fantastic today.
I have a haircut made for radio and podcasts.
This is radio. No one's going to believe that.
He said the brown nose.
Yeah. On my immediate right is a local proprietor here from Mentor on the Lake, Gaz.
Thanks for having me, Jerry. I was just sitting around thinking today, what can I do with my time that I don't get paid for? And, well, this came up. I'm glad to be here. This is awesome.
Well, we're here to meet those needs.
Yeah, thank you.
And our fourth classmate for today, on my far right, aspiring comedian, John Bruton.
Hello,
John. Thanks for coming today.
He's no problem. Full of excitement.
I'm already excited.
Well, welcome to class. You should be excited because something exciting is about to happen. I'm going to be presenting you quizzes, test questions, essay questions on various general knowledge and information and history and science topics. And based on the quality of your answers, you'll be receiving a grade. At the end of today's class, the top student will receive the coveted class prize, the Golden Banana.
Mm, that sounds good.
I want to take that home.
Are you ready for your first topic?
We are ready. I shouldn't speak for everyone. I'm ready.
I'm never ready, so there's no point.
You have probably heard it said something to the effect of whether or not a toilet seat is so clean you can eat off of it. And this brings to mind the research of Professor Charles Gerba, who has studied the surfaces around your household. And he has listed the 15 germiest places in the typical American household. Any idea what's at the top of that list?
It's going to be doorknob, because that's the thing that everyone always talks about when they talk about like licking doorknobs as far as where the germs are at. My teacher always said doorknob, so I'm going to go with doorknobs.
Gaz is going with doorknobs. Would anyone like to agree, disagree, or offer other suggestions?
My first thought was bathrooms, but that's too easy. This is a trick question. I can sense it.
Well, in terms of, there's always a trick to knowledge and test questions. I will say the answers on this list are more specific than just a room. It means like specific surfaces such
like
as doorknob or toilet seat.
Okay, toilet seat.
Or doorknobs.
Doorknobs.
Did you notice how he said it again? Yeah. I'm not saying he's foreshadowing what the answer is, but he just said it again after I did. So.
I'm going to have to say couch because you come home, your clothes are dirty, you sit on your couch, put your feet up there, nasty feet.
John, what do you think of these answers?
I think the front doorknob might be it. The doorknob.
He stole my answer.
Is on the list of 15. It's in the top 10, but it's not in the top 5. I will say toilet seat is also on the list, although it is, according to his research, only the 15th germiest place.
I believe that.
Our posteriors are covered all day by clothes, usually, and there's actually not much chance for dangerous germs to accumulate there.
Be the inside of a refrigerator?
Refrigerator handles are in fact number 5 on the list.
But that's like a doorknob again. That's just a fancy doorknob. That's okay, so doorknobs are in 5 now. We've just moved it up onto the 5
list. So doorknobs and refrigerator handles are things that you handle with your hands. And hands are the common way that germs are transferred.
TV remote. I think the remote control of the TV has to be horrible.
That's a good one. Especially if you watch porn with yours, which I do often.
Oh, your computer keyboard, speaking of that.
Well, I have it up to my TV connected, and I use my remote.
Including refrigerator handle, the top 5 germiest places in the typical American household are all located in the kitchen.
In the kitchen?
I can believe that.
That's weird.
Your faucet handles.
Faucet handles are on the list as number 3. So, good points for you, though no one has actually shouted out the number 1 germiest place.
Light switches?
No.
No, nope. Really.
That's a good question. I mean, that's a good answer.
I'm trying to think everything I don't clean in my house.
So I would say, I was going to say dishwasher or sink basin.
The sink drain area is the second dirtiest place.
God, I'm so close. I can almost taste it.
The floor. The floor would be the dirtiest.
Although the floor does track our shoes in from outside.
And food that you drop on there, is that on the list?
Yeah. It's still hand-based germ transfer.
Microwave
is
oven.
The top areas. Not the microwave oven is not on the list at all.
Stove handles.
Stove handles not on the list at all.
Okay. Cupboard handles.
I think we've covered the handle-based guesses of all types, from doorknob to cupboard.
Just counter.
Oven mitts? I don't know.
I feel like just countertops, and then it's got to be countertops.
Cutting boards, which are part of countertops, are number four.
Okay,
so
well,
we have got 2, 3, 4, and 5 covered.
Oh, that's your trash can.
No, that's a vague answer, the cutting boards. Yes. Could use plastic. Hands.
Trash can handle.
I will give you a clue, probably too broad of a clue. It will just give away the whole proposition.
Proposition.
What
reminds me of a
do you clean a sink drain area, a faucet handle, and a cutting board with?
A wash rag.
Wash rag. Bing, bing, bing.
Boom. Yeah.
We have a winner, and you get a gold star for that answer.
Nice.
Thank you.
Striving for that golden banana.
So I don't have wash rags in my kitchen. I use paper towels or just, well, I do have a scrub brush.
They do list it as sponges and dishcloths. They're very germy. They're in contact with the other dirty areas, and people tend to keep them and not really clean them properly.
I don't like to use anything called a sponge because it reminds me of birth control and grosses me out.
Yes.
So I don't have any sponges in my kitchen. That's
your sponges in the dishwasher.
Chris, going to say something?
Oh, I was just thinking of the Seinfeld episode with Elaine and the sponges. But
well, and I was just wondering which would be more germy. Which type of sponge would be more full of germs?
Well, it depends. Before
depends
or after.
Girl.
You know, it depends on when it was used. I mean, is it new out of the box? Oh, it would be pretty clean.
Do they still use those?
No,
those were actually banned as a health hazard for women.
I must have missed that. I got started late.
There was a short window of paradise for 15 minutes in the 80s.
You know, women they don't know a lot, so they would leave them in there too long. You know, women are.
This is why we need, politicians to tell us how to
make
this
is not...
Exactly, and men.
This quiz topic not being human biology and sexuality, we will move on.
Yeah.
John Bruton, for getting the top answer, gets the top grade.
Yeah, it sounds kind of BS, but...
You kind of gave it to
Daz
me.
Daz gets 50 points.
Thank you. That makes more sense.
Which is still failing.
Which is times 2, 100%.
Chris will get 69 points for that effort, and Cammy will get 70, which is, of course, one better than 69.
69, that is so cliche.
It is kind of cliche. You've probably heard a story or some version of a quote of a famous actor who, on their deathbed, said something like, death is easy. Comedy is truly difficult.
Yeah. Shakespeare said that.
Shakespeare said the thing that you said.
Oh.
But Shakespeare did not say the
thing
that I
said. He said that.
As a kind of a pop culture myth, that quote has been ascribed to numerous people. Though the actor who probably said it is not famous in 21st century American culture.
Steve Martin.
But it does raise the issue of deathbed quotes. Famous statements by famous people attributed to them on their deathbeds.
This sounds like a topic I will get none of them
correct. Yeah, but it could be fun trying.
Well, I have various famous people. For example, Winston Churchill once is supposed to have said, I'm bored with it all.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
And the famous film actor from the black and white era, Humphrey Bogart, is reported to have said, I should never have switched from scotch to martinis.
Mm. And he was a homosexual, I believe.
I think we can't confirm that. If anything, he was a world-famous womanizer.
Well, I think he was a homosexual.
That's sometimes
that
a
was
crime.
The Cary Grant rumor, wasn't it?
I think he was also
homosexual. Can you think of what famous historical figure said, I die before my time?
Mm. That was Mel Gibson.
Anna Nicole Smith.
Yeah. Adolf Hitler.
No, no, and no, although they're all good guesses. Another petty tyrant, however, Napoleon Bonaparte.
Wow. Mm. See, I was close. I should get tyrant points.
You get some tyrant points.
Bonus points.
I think he died of syphilis.
Here's a couple of other tyrants. How about Peter the Great, Tsar of Russia, on his deathbed?
Mm. What did he say?
Yes. Any thoughts?
He said, I hate Jews.
He did not, although he did, in fact, make a religious statement.
See? That's what I'm talking about.
Some of these famous quotes are supposedly people making some kind of religious confession or religious declaration. And some are the opposite. Some secularists or philosophers try to make their deathbed comments like a final rejection of religion. So,
right.
You get sort of both themes in different people. Peter the Great, for example, said, "I believe, Lord, and confess. Help my unbelief." However, Charles Darwin said something a little different. Anyone know Charles Darwin's?
He decided he was for God, I'm going to guess, since his entire life was
evolution is
attributed. Yeah, right. It was attributed to the lack of God. Perhaps at the end he was like, you know what? I better cover my bases. I think there's a God. And then that was his parting words.
It is an interesting guess because that is a kind of internet rumor. That Charles Darwin had a deathbed conversion to religion.
Sure, that's what I'm doing. I'm going out after I live a complete life of sin.
Just to make sure you get in. Yeah. There, you know.
According to all my religious friends, you can screw up as much as you want, but as long as you confess right at the end and like accept Jesus, then you're in. So, I mean, why do it early?
I think it doesn't make any sense. Here is that he said, you know, God exists, and then he snickered and said, "Boy, that's going to screw him up for decades."
Some contemporary famous atheists. Have made a point to have their deaths videotaped in order to combat rumors of deathbed conversions. But Charles Darwin's reported final sentence was, "I am not the least afraid to die," which is generally construed as an anti-religious statement, as opposed to being like afraid to die and making that deathbed conversion.
Mommy, I'm scared.
I like the idea of having your deathbed videotaped, but what I'm going to do is really plan the whole thing out. It won't even be at the time that I die, but I'm gonna have it look like I'm dying, and I'm going to come up with like really witty, written out things that I'm going to say. I don't know what they are right now because I haven't thought about it until this exact moment.
Right.
But then I'll just have that be my deathbed confession at the time that I actually die.
And then you can be in charge of all the post-production and, right. And branding.
It's going to be perfect. I'm gonna look really healthy, like, wow, Gaz looked really healthy when he died.
And then you're going to be like Elvis. Everyone's going to keep having sightings of Gaz.
Well, I'll hide the video until actual death.
Famous poet Dylan Thomas had an amusing report.
One of my favorite poets, by the way.
I can tell you
He wrote Ring Around the Posy, I believe.
I think he wrote the Nantucket series, too.
He did do that.
He died in 1953, and his reported deathbed statement was, "I've had 18 straight whiskeys. I think that's a record."
That's what everyone says. Sounds when they're like hammered, though. You know, like there's no one that gets totally wasted and is like, "Oh my God, there's people more wasted than me." No, you always believe that you're the most wasted. You smoke 50 joints. Oh my God, I'm so on illegal drugs.
I do have one more person on my list. Famous American inventor Thomas Edison has a famous deathbed quote.
He invented the chalkboard, I believe.
Yeah, I think he did.
I think he invented electricity.
Yeah, I don't think he invented it. He just discovered it more so.
I think he said, "Oh my God, there really is a light. I see it."
Well, he, of his many inventions, the modern day light bulb is one of them, of course.
Of course it is. Not really electricity, though. That's a light bulb.
Right. His deathbed statement was reported to be, "It is very beautiful over there." No one knows what he was talking about.
Well, because a lot of times people hallucinate when they die. So at that time, that's why they see things. Right. And then he's probably seeing, who knows what he's seeing. He's on drugs. Mental drugs, though. And probably morphine. A lot of times they give you morphine when you're dying, so I'm morphine.
Of course, some people have a unhealthy fear of death and other unhealthy fears, such as arachnophobia.
Spiders.
Yeah.
Of course, spiders unnerve a lot of people, but to be diagnosed with a phobia, you've got to have an irrational, extreme fear, like a debilitating fear of spiders. Sometimes students have a fear of didascalinophobia.
That's the art dye that you would use for like
fear
painting.
Fear of art dyes.
Yeah. Going on your final exam in your underwear. Mm-hmm. Okay, finding the room.
Fear of learning something.
Fear of going to school.
Oh, I think it's the fear of someone seeing your boner while you're in class. I think
so
that is
common seventh grade.
Yeah, that's one of those.
There is a fear of being looked at or stared at. Which is scopophobia.
What is the desire to have that?
Scopophobia.
What's that called? Because I have that. I have that.
Scopophilia.
Problem.
Yeah.
Scopophilia. Creepophilia.
John? Some students also have what is listed as testophobia.
Do we even have to comment on that? That's hilarious.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
Yeah, right, testy.
And then, I believe Gaz may have this fear.
Thank you.
Hippopotamonostrosesquesquipedaliophobia.
That is the fear of your genitals getting too large and being unable to walk, I believe.
You did identify the Greek word for large in the middle
Thank
of that
you.
Word.
Thank you. I did hear that. That's why
hippo,
I said that.
So I was thinking like every animal in the zoo, the fear of every animal.
Fear of large horses.
Yeah, I heard equine.
Fear of large ears, perhaps.
Fear of long words.
Mm.
Wow.
I have that.
How does that work?
Some people are made anxious around large vocabulary words they're unfamiliar with.
I can feel it. It's kind of like hanging out with Jerry Jaffe all day. I've struck in with that. He always uses words
Many of
I have
my
no
students
idea.
Leave my class with that fear, not having had it when the class started.
Yeah, I got to bring a dictionary around when this guy talks.
The fear of death is necrophobia. How about genophobia? Mm. Have you ever heard of that one?
It's a fear of movie stars.
Genophobia.
There is a synonym that might be a little more direct, coitophobia.
Ah, coit. It's a fear of...
Coitus. Say it, Gaz.
Coitus.
Sex. I was going to say
gets
coitus,
it first.
Right.
Fear of sexual intercourse.
Yeah. That's right. It's going with coitus. I was going to say sex, though.
Ibophobia is a joke word. It's not a real diagnosable disorder, but it is an interesting word. Iophobia.
Iophobia?
Yeah.
Fear of yourself?
No. Fear of palindromes, since iophobia is the word phobia.
Could you use it in a sentence?
Oh, palindrome is a big swingy thing, right?
No, but you do bring to mind an interesting question. What is a palindrome?
Yeah, I feel like I know what a palindrome is.
The same way in both directions.
A word that is spelled the same way in both directions, such as race car is a famous palindrome.
That's right.
Really? See, now that's...
From all the Dan Brown books, that's how I know it. You know, it's like every book he has, he's got palindromes in there that say some sort
every
of
other clue
thing.
Is a palindrome.
Yeah, right, right.
Race car, wow.
I'm going to ponder that for a minute.
Yeah, this is a fountain of knowledge.
See? You learned something. Every day you learn something.
I
not a
never
waste.
Heard that.
Of course, there are dozens and even hundreds of such phobias. John, do you have any phobias?
I was scared of intercourse for a while. Mm-hmm. That one I could relate to. Yeah, you hear sense. A lot about, you know, it came up when they had talking about AIDS. So we thought everybody had HIV or AIDS.
Right.
And we didn't know what it was. We just thought you'd get it. So I was scared for like, until I was about 16. Then I got over it.
16 is a common age to get over that fear.
I was scared of sex a lot, but not because of that. It was because every time I would try to have it, they would laugh at me. So I eventually started to become fearful of sex.
Right. Stage fright fear.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Man,
fear of going on stage and being
laughed
at.
Performance anxiety.
Yes. Here's a funny sounding phobia. Omphalophobia. O-M-P-H. Omphalophobia.
Fear of Oompa Loompas.
You beat me. I'm so mad. She stole my line. Yep. She stole my gag.
She doesn't hesitate. When you're an equine expert, you got to have lightning fast reflexes.
Yes.
Those horses will eat you.
Yeah, I'm just a communications major, so... She's got me stumped.
Get
you should
so
be able
educated.
To communicate quicker then.
Yeah. Obviously, you never majored in communication.
I did not.
A fear of belly buttons. I'm full of phobia.
That's a thing, huh?
That's a thing.
That's a real thing.
That's a real thing, according to Wikipedia.
Wait, I thought this was professors doing this research. You're just pulling this off of Wikipedia.
Well, this is how professors do research.
Oh, this is how research.
I don't think it's citable
that's
information.
That's how I got my bachelor's degree. I should have just stayed in school and got my PhD then.
You should have it
that's
by
all
now.
There was to it.
You know,
would have never left.
It's a Wizard of Oz moment. You got a glimpse behind the curtain.
Yeah.
What is it teachers actually do? 5 minutes
Damn
before
it.
Class, they go on Wikipedia.
Get all their information. Here, learn this.
For glimpsing behind the curtain, you get a bonus 10 points.
Oh, nice.
For your lightning fast reflexes, you get 15 bonus points.
Same
John, for your aspirations to be a comedian, you get 20 bonus points.
Thank you.
And Gaz,
this is
you get
this is gonna be huge.
25 bonus points, bringing your total to negative 25.
That's not big. That's not kind of what I was anticipating, but
right.
Still. Feeling good about it. I feel we got a bonus round coming up eventually. So
there will be a bonus round, but before we get to the bonus round, I'm thinking of Chris and his communications degree.
Oh, yeah.
As I ask the following
It's good, it's good to waste your money. I usually do it on porn, but communications degree is good too.
Tomato, tomato.
What year was the first color television broadcast?
Oh, actually, this wasn't a textbook I had by.
Of course it was. You're a college-educated man.
Yes. Hey, I'm serious. Oh, man.
Like 57, maybe?
I'm gonna say.
What would you say, Gaz? John says 57.
I don't know. You sounded like he had a look of excitement of over 57. So
which you
now I was gonna say 48. I was gonna just randomly say 1948.
1948. The year I'm looking for is the first public broadcast.
Yes.
Of something in color.
So that's CBS broadcast the very first commercial color TV program.
So it probably had like the year. Peacock on there in color, and I'm gonna say it was 1948. I'm gonna go back to my original answer.
I only say 64. I'll say 1964.
We have three different decades represented.
Yeah.
48, 57, 64. So
if it was actually broadcast, I would say 64. But
so you have two people that have no idea what they're talking about. One of us 60s. Could be close.
Oh, no, we have two in the 60s.
My mother's old, and she was born in 44. So I figured she was like maybe a teenager when they got the color TV. It was a big deal to her.
So
it's going to be something.
I like the way you think. Of course, you mentioned getting the color TV.
That's probably way after the publication.
Yes, there's a kind of chicken and the egg problem, like they have with 3D television or other types of home technology. Who would buy a color TV if there was no color broadcasts? So the estimate of the number of people who watched the first color broadcast on television in color is estimated at zero.
Okay.
Very few.
That's not a high
people.
Estimation.
It's not.
A lot of people.
But they had to start broadcasting things in color to get people to want to buy a color television.
I mean, imagine, even at least the people that broadcasted it probably watched it for some sort of self excitement.
I'll say 53.
53 people?
No, 53.
I'm going to go with that. I think 53 people at least watched that.
I think 1953 they started, so when they probably broadcast.
These hypothetical 0 to 53 people who watched this on a color television in their home did so in the year 1951.
Oh, I was so close to 48.
I was so close with 66.
And he went over, so we went Price is Right. We go Price is Right, John's wrong.
Did your fancy Wikipedia tell you that?
I know my mother's
no,
old.
Like but a website on the history of television did.
Oh.
The internet's teaching us.
The first, thank you, internet, for teaching us. Think the first color program broadcast was a variety show called Premiere.
Mm.
I just made air quotes when I said that.
Yeah.
Premiere. And it starred Ed Sullivan, as well as other celebrities of the day.
Okay, so it wasn't like some test pattern or something.
No, it was
from
a real
bunker in a mountain.
Television production.
Okay.
Actual show.
And it was only broadcast into four cities.
Was Mentor on the Lake one of them?
Mentor on the Lake.
That was my hometown, so.
Or anywhere else in the state of Ohio was not on that list.
Oh, okay.
Boston, Philadelphia, Baltimore, and Washington, D.C. were the four cities that Premiere was broadcast into.
Mentor on the Lake, I think, was the fourth town after.
Might have been Fairport Harbor. They've been making the news a lot.
Yeah, they might have. Might have. Heard.
And later in 1951, CBS started airing the first regularly shown television show in color. So that show Premiere was like a one-off variety show to be kind of an event.
And that was probably the Beverly Hillbillies.
No, that's what I always think of. I'm thinking back to my childhood when they syndicated like Batman and Gilligan's Island, and they always had the black and white, and then they transgressed into the color, and like now
well,
in
also,
glorious Technicolor.
If your childhood was in the 70s, that is when color televisions became affordable. RCA... released the initial color television in 1954, like for commercial or for retail sales, and that cost over $1,000.
Seriously?
Nice.
And that's in 1954 money as well.
I would have bought like
my
seven.
My grandfather had one though.
Really?
Yeah.
RCA
my mom,
from
she
the
was
50s?
Like, my mom was pumped about telling me about the color TV they had.
Your grandfather did very well for himself, apparently.
Steel mill.
I guess so. Yeah.
Probably saved his money.
In the 50s and 60s.
And then blew it all on a TV.
Yeah. Like, he spent that much on a TV, right?
No college for my kids.
Well,
yeah, right.
It was common for one family to get a color TV,
yeah,
and
the
neighborhood,
whole block,
whole
yeah.
block would come and watch also.
And then you were like the party center. Everyone thought
yes.
you were cool.
Yeah. Yes.
And in the 80s, it was the swimming pool that brought everybody
I remember
house.
The launch of MTV. That dates me, but...
As do I. And
Did you take off that day? I think I called in sick from school that day. Wow. I swear to God, I did.
I did not.
To watch the launch of MTV.
I didn't watch the day of the official launch.
I mean, when the Little Moon
launch.
Man
yeah.
came.
Yeah.
I think I was home. So we had just gotten cable.
I think it might have been in August.
It was 82?
I don't have that detail in front of me, but I pledged to look it up until the next class.
Really, it was
I can't wait for that. I'm really just going to be on pins and needles waiting for that information.
You should be on pins and needles, Gaz, because I had high hopes for you to win the Golden Banana, yeah. And you currently have the low score in the class.
Yeah, that's
bullshit. You were actually keeping track?
Yes, I'm keeping track. I'm the teacher. I'm judging you and grading you at every moment. So you need to step up, Cammie. Somebody's going to win the Golden Banana, and it might be you.
Oh, my God.
It might be.
I need something for my child to be proud of one day, and right now, currently, there's nothing. Winning the Golden Banana would be the high point if I were to go down right now for my son to look back upon and say, hey, you know, my dad did this. He's pretty sweet.
I suspect that this next question is going to either raise or lower the self-esteem of our students.
Okay.
Okay.
On average,
Six times a day I do that.
Lifespan, how many minutes do you spend kissing?
Kissing?
Probably depends on how ugly you are.
Yeah. It really depends on how long you've been in a relationship for. Because you start kissing in the beginning of a relationship, but after a while you get bored with that, and then you just go right to the other stuff.
The other stuff?
That we can't speak about.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm. So an average lifetime. Does that include kissing your moms and aunts and stuff?
It does include kissing.
It includes his aunts.
Oh,
it's not like all make-out set, you know, kissing.
But it is only talking about mouth-to-mouth kissing, so like kisses on the forehead or...
Those do not count.
Kissing a lady on the knuckles, those don't count.
Kissing a lady on the knuckles? Where did you get that from?
Yeah. France, of course.
Oh, I'm sorry.
A lot of my dates have ended with that.
Unsophisticated slob I am. I don't say, kiss the lady on her
John knuckles. Has an answer he wants to posit.
4 days.
4 days. I would like to challenge you. The statistic that I have, which is from a psychology magazine, is in minutes.
Minutes.
For a lifetime?
Yes.
I was going minutes.
Okay. Sounds like Gaz's sex life is judged in minutes, huh?
782 minutes. Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm going. Okay, Chris is going to 782 minutes over the course of his life, mouth-to-mouth affectionate contact.
I would say...
Wait, I didn't say don't make it personal. I thought it was average. Mine was up more.
Just to go follow one of your jokes that you've done in the past here, I will say 7,469. Oh, man.
And he took my answer.
Yeah, there we go. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go with that.
I'm going to say 1,282 for no particular reason.
I'm saying 4 days worth of minutes.
Okay, who's
yeah, can we convert that?
Can you? It's your test.
Perhaps communications major can figure that math out on that.
Yeah, it's I took liberal arts math. I don't think I can.
I will say Gaz's answer is the closest so far.
I knew it.
Because the answer is in tens of thousands of minutes.
Oh, okay, well.
Well, Gaz is a playa.
Okay. Let me cut to the chase. The minutes of average kissing for the typical adult over a lifetime is 20,000.
20.
Wow. I am bad. I'm thinking 4 days worth.
I told you I took
a
little
What is it for a pedophile?
A pedophile probably doesn't kiss a lot either.
Probably not.
More groping. What's the minutes in groping?
It'd be comparable to the 20,000 probably.
Is certainly a Western concept, because in other countries and cultures that they may not kiss.
Or they may kiss more. I believe in Russia it is customary to greet your uncles with open mouth kissing.
Open mouth?
Yeah,
that
open
was
mouth.
West Virginia.
That's not.
Maybe it is West Virginia. I confuse West Virginia.
Well, there
and Russia.
Is a Georgia in both places.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it could be multicultural.
It probably depends on the dental care in the country, too, how much you kiss.
Mm-hmm. France, they don't kiss at all.
Except a lady's knuckles.
Mm, right. Except for that.
All right. So I am now going to calculate each student's final grade. And while I'm doing that, I'm going to give you all a chance to earn some extra credit points with your final comments or witticisms or questions or anything you'd like to say. Chris, I'll start with you.
I was just going to ask you what part of the show, when do I get to talk about my comedy career?
Yeah. This is not that kind of podcast.
Oh, sorry.
I'll put a link on the website. Cammie, any last comments or desperate grasp for points?
All right. I would have to say that next time we do this, you're going to have to increase the temperature in the room if you want us all to sit here naked.
I can make no guarantees about that. You're the one who agreed to sit here naked.
That was a weird request, I believe.
How about you, Gaz?
Yeah,
I
see.
Last thoughts or bids for points?
Yeah, I would say that after this show, I have developed a microphobia, and that is the fear of podcasts. I've developed that.
Podcastophobia.
Yeah.
Well, we'll cure you of that before we're done.
Thank you.
And John, any last thoughts, comments, questions?
I wish I knew more of this stuff was like before when I was still in school, so I could like just keep a Wikipedia right there instead of actually like reading books and doing that old stuff. I could just look it up.
Oh, that'd be so much greater.
I wish I was in school when the internet was on. That's what I wish.
It's turning us into a nation of morons.
I missed it.
Yeah, but quotable morons.
Do you want your college photos up on the internet?
Ah. I do.
Those are Gaz's proudest college moments of all. Right. Frat parties and late nights in bars.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I have finished calculating our final grades, I'd like to take this moment for all of us to congratulate the winner of the Golden Banana Classroom Prize and...
It is so easy, me.
...owner of a communication degree, Chris McCall.
Oh, hey. Man. Well, you know, he has spent the most money on education and gotten the littlest for it, so I feel like he's deserving.
Off.
Wow.
Settled 69 references.
Right.
It's called vision. Visionary.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Professor.
Thank you.
Gold Star Classroom is written and produced by Jerry Jaffe. Our producer and engineer is Stephen Gutierrez. Original music composed and produced by Jeff Gettert. Mr. Gettert is also our assistant producer. All commentary and opinions expressed by guests of Gold Star Classroom are meant for entertainment purposes only. For Gold Star Classroom, I'm Jerry Jaffe.